Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Absolutely super, Ron. Beautiful day here in Michigan. How are you?
Yeah, doing fine, and it's also beautiful down here in Atlanta. Well, Bill,
probably a lot warmer,
though. I'm sure it's much warmer. I mean, they have, 9 months of snow and 3 months of rough sledding up that way? Well, Bill, you know,
for sure.
Yeah, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs, our listeners, can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Carrie Silverstein of SMA LLC and The Negotiating Edge. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Our sponsor today is Patents and More. Patents and More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Yeah, and we really count on and appreciate their assistance. Well, you know, Carrie Silverstein is the president and CEO of SMA LLC and The Negotiating Edge. He heads a group of four consultants, and they provide facilitation in the areas of strategic planning, consultative selling, market research, negotiations, and conflict resolution. He's also a senior professor at DeVry University Keller Graduate School there in Milwaukee, and he facilitates classes in entrepreneur planning, legal and ethical issues, negotiation skills, and strategic planning. And he's also been a judge in the annual Wisconsin Governor's Business Plan Contest for the last 5 years. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Okay. Well, I'm really interested in listening to you share your how to navigate barriers to entrepreneurial success and the top 10 mistakes that young entrepreneurs make that really negatively impact their ability to be successful. What is the profile of today's young entrepreneurs?
Well, that's an interesting question because recent research has shown that 66% are between 26 and 40 years old. 70% are male, 30% female, and amazingly, 46% are the first-time entrepreneurs. But yet, 28% are starting their second company, and we call those people serial entrepreneurs. They start and sell, start and sell. And the biggest reason people get to be entrepreneurs is because they see an opportunity to make something great or offer something great. And educationally, 72% of them have a college degree. Of that 72%, 24% have a graduate degree. So they're pretty well educated. But interestingly enough, only 52% of them earned between $30,000 and $100,000 last year. And 25% earned less than $30,000. So when you're an entrepreneur, you're taking a lot of risk. You're not going to make a lot of money the first time around.
Yeah, it takes a while. So they're young and they're educated.
Young, educated, and personality-wise, they're very self-motivated. They're courageous because there's a lot of risk involved, confident in what they're doing, very knowledgeable, and they tend to be very driven and persevere. And those are important characteristics of an entrepreneur because this is not an easy hill to climb.
I was surprised that 70% are male and 30% female. I would bet the female side is growing and the male side is declining.
I would say I agree with you. I've seen, in looking at the business plans that I review, when I review hundreds of them, more and more are coming in from females. Also, one of the organizations that I volunteer with, which I'll be talking about later, is in Wisconsin, is called WIBIC. Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Corporation, and they provide microloans and mentoring to young female entrepreneurs. So I've worked with a lot of them.
Carrie, what are the biggest challenges that these entrepreneurs face in today's marketplace?
Well, in my experience and in all the research that I've done, the biggest challenge is the ability to finance their business in the long term. That's the biggest one, getting the money to get started. And we'll be discussing more about that as we go forward. But another one is having the necessary skills to run the business, plan the business, and execute the business and manage it. What I have found with many of the business plans that I get in from entrepreneurs, the idea is great, but they have no way of executing it. So it can't be a one-person operation. I'm always saying there's a need for a Mr. Inside and a Mr. Outside. Mr. Outside is the person that's going to sell the product, and Mr. Inside is the one who's developed it. And another one, big challenge to entrepreneurs is knowing when to let go. I call it the control paradox. We see many businesses that are stymied by the fact that the entrepreneur or entrepreneurs, in case there's two of them, don't want to give up the daily control of the business in order to let it grow. So I've always told my students and my clients that you have the most control when you give up control. And many entrepreneurs, their personalities do not permit them to give up control, and they actually strangle the business.
I have a partner company right now with my one business, and that's one of the challenges they have right now is that they have a CFO that owns 50% of the company, and he just won't let go.
And that's a personality defect, and that personality defect becomes a big defect for the business in total.
Now I'd come up with a better word, though, than that, Carrie. If I went in and said, that, you know what, I think you have a personality defect, I don't think it'd go well.
No, I don't, but, you know, we find that among many entrepreneurs, and I've experienced businesses where the owner built the business to as much as $250 million and couldn't take it to the next step because he refused to give up control.
Yeah, I met the inventor of the sleep number bed that you've probably seen on TV, and he got it to a particular level, but it wasn't until he hired a CEO and kind of went on to go invent something else that business really took off.
Well, if you think about it and look at profiles of extremely successful people, and I always use the example of Microsoft and their entrepreneur who started the business, as opposed to Apple and Steve Jobs. If you look at Microsoft, Bill Gates knew when to step aside, right, Bring in professionals and let the business grow. And then you look at Apple and you look at Steve Jobs and how he had to be forced out when they were in the Lisa computers, because the business was going in the wrong way and it was starting to lose market share. When they brought in the gentleman from Pepsi-Cola, the business started to turn around and move in the right direction again. And Steve Jobs now sees what his position really is. Just like Bill Gates, he's the chief idea officer. He takes it to the next level with the new products, but the daily running of the business has to be left to professionals.
Right. When you talk about Mr. Inside and Outside, I think about HP, Hewlett and Packard. How are the challenges today different than those faced by entrepreneurs in the 1990s and before?
Well, I have to believe that the ability to get seed money financing today is harder than it was in the 90s and before. Considering we are emerging from a deep recession and a mortgage crisis, money is tight, especially for new business startups. And entrepreneurs are finding it difficult to get financing from banks and must rely on alternative, more expensive sources, which would can talk more about as we go forward, but that's venture capitalists and angels, and they exact a big percentage of the profit out of the business in order to provide their financing, because they look at the risk involved and they want big paybacks for that risk.
Carrie, what are some of the biggest mistakes a young entrepreneur makes?
Well, I'm going to seem like I'm being redundant, but one of them is running out of money, not having sufficient funding to launch their product or service offerings. A lot of them are using credit cards to finance the startup, and multiple credit cards, and now they end up paying 18 to 29% interest on money that they could have borrowed at much lower rates. So it's the whole thing about the funding and being able to get somebody with money to back them up. And I've had instances where people have mortgaged their homes, basically liquidated their IRAs to get a business started, and when the business fails, they have nothing left. So financing is probably the biggest mistake that young entrepreneurs make.
What strategies can prevent or help them overcome this mistake and others?
Well, one of the things, again, is planning. When you put together your business plan, you put together your financial plan. And if you have a totally cohesive plan, both financial and administrative, and you go to a bank or you go to an alternative source of funding, you can look for the correct amount of money. I mean, the angel or the venture capitalist will look at this business plan, analyze it. These are very adept people. And if they see that you have really worked it out, the money will be there. I go back to the cost will be high, but the money will be there. Also, you can meet with a small business bank to arrange for financing. In Milwaukee, we have the Park Bank and other banks that work with entrepreneurs and get them the money. But you're not going to get all the money from a bank. You're going to have to put up some of your own funds. Also, we have the SBA, local incubator organizations, who provide microloans for businesses, small loans. But again, the interest rate is high. But I've seen these microloans work. We have more than a great number of success stories through this Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Corporation of women businesses in baking and in garments and in other things that have been successful using this seed money.
What are some of the other mistakes that they make, Carrie?
Well, as somebody who teaches at the graduate level in business, I find it astounding that when I review these business plans and for the state of Wisconsin each year in this contest, the lack of market research, both at the secondary and the primary level. They don't really know who their customer is, and they have not demonstrated that there's a clear need for their product or service offering. They have an idea, and they want to run with it, and it's not really thought through to the level that it should be. And many times, if they're using only secondary market research, the information is old. Anything older than 3 to 5 years is no good. You need primary market research that tells you what's going on, especially in the technology area where things move so quickly. So I would say another one of the major mistakes is not spending the time to really demonstrate there's a need for your product and there's a customer out there that is willing to buy it.
How does someone find if there's a need?
I'm sorry?
Well, if someone wanted to just look to see if there's really a need for their product or service, how would they go about doing that?
Well, one of the things that I would do if I came up with an idea, I would, you know, with the Internet, I would Google it to see if anybody else has that idea and if they're talking about it or there's any publicity about it. It's not unusual to have people working simultaneously on the same idea in different parts of this world and coming up with it. The important thing is to match your product to an existing need. To me, the Sleep Number bed is a very interesting example that you bring up, that with so many people with lower back problems and insomnia and other sleep-related problems, apnea, that somebody says, you know, I'm going to come up with a bed that's adjustable and on both sides. And then so either the wife or the husband can adjust it to their own personal preference. And that's developing a product that's meeting an existing need. Right now, with the way energy costs are skyrocketing, alternative energy sources, more efficient engines, more efficient lighting, which you've seen come out, these are all in response to identified needs. Now, people making products to, you know, meet those identified needs.
Yeah, and I think another part to that is that, you know, the entrepreneur might have come up with something that does meet a need, but to me, the 1-2 punch on that is, are they willing to pay what you have to solve that particular problem? And I've seen several entrepreneurs that they really were targeted on an existing need, but the substitutes, the alternatives to their solution was more cost effective, and they were willing to live with the inconvenience rather than pay, you know, a premium price for the new solution.
Well, you give a perfect example right now with the Leaf that's out from I believe it's Toyota, and the American version through GM, the Volt. there's been very little interest in both those cars, but as the price of gas goes up, people start to get very interested in getting a car that is either a hybrid or a pure electric car. So price of fuel goes up, and what's going to happen? More and more people will turn to these alternative modes of transportation. You see it with the Prius. You see it that Lexus just brought out their hybrid, which is really nothing more than the Prius with a fancier body on it. But people are willing to pay more for those cars, knowing that they're going to get 50 miles to the gallon rather than driving around in a car that gets 24 miles to the gallon. It's a cost-benefit analysis. People, you know, Kohl's department stores, which are based in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, in the states where they have a tremendous amount of sunshine, are building their new stores with solar panels on the roof. That's not something that you would have considered 10 years ago. But with the cost of energy, it makes sense for them in Nevada and in Texas, in New Mexico, Arizona, and California to build stores with solar roofs.
It's something. The one that I'm thinking about is a fellow invented a timing and light device for Toastmasters International clubs, so that when somebody's presentation, you know, had reached the minimum threshold for the speech, and a little green light would come on, and then when they were in the middle, a yellow light would come on, and when they went over time, it would be a red light. And you know, his device cost $1,500. Well, everybody in the Toastmasters club says, you know, with a stopwatch and a green card, a yellow card, and a red card, we're doing just fine. And he had invested something like $50,000 in the development of this device.
Well, he goes back to my original statement. If he had done his market research on a primary level and spoken to members of Toastmasters and said, what are you willing to pay for a device that helps you with the presentation, he would have gotten some ideas. And if he heard that the most anybody would pay is $50 and his product costs $1,500, he says, well, there's no market for my product at this time.
Bingo. So can you provide some examples of other kind of mistakes that entrepreneurs make when they're starting or running an entrepreneurial business?
Well, yeah, there's a number. Many new businesses don't have sufficient funding to last more than a season or a year. When I see business plans and I see them taking out salaries, I'm saying, hey, you can't do that the first year. The bank wants to get paid, and you need money to run the business. So they don't have enough money to run the business. They don't have the money necessary to hire the people to support the business, for example, salespeople or workmen or subcontractors. Another one that I've seen in a lot of business plans, in the second and the third year, if it's a retail type of environment, they're opening up second locations. And I'm saying, whoa, you don't have the cash flow to support that. You're going to be actually strangling the business because you're shunting off the money that you would use to buy new inventory and to maintain your business into starting another business. And you know, another location. You can't do that unless you have additional funding coming in. And I think one of the two biggest ones is they're related to your sponsor. One is they do not engage the services of an attorney or an accountant when they begin to assemble their business plan, which they should. They need the accountant to help them with their financials, and they need the attorney to help them formulate their business, whether it's an LLC or an S-Corp or a C-Corp. So need to formalize their business. And continuing with that thread, they don't protect their product or service. They don't invest in intellectual property. And again, it's a money question. It costs money to copyright your software. It costs money to patent your product and to do the patent search. And the impatience gets them into trouble. I mean, they need to protect what they have developed. Otherwise, a larger competitor will copy their business model and provide an alternative product and put them out of business. So those are four more of the mistakes that young entrepreneurs make. The serial entrepreneur doesn't make those mistakes. They've made them in the past. They've had a successful business, and now they know how to go and start the next successful business.
Kerry, how important is a detailed business plan in starting your business?
How about it's critical. It's just as important as a pilot taking off without a flight plan. How is he going to get from point A to point B? You need a flight plan, and your business plan is your flight plan for your business. If you're going to receive funding from a bank, they want a business plan with detailed financials. And unless you have a detailed business plan, you can't identify your financial needs or your target market or your marketing strategies or any other things. You're flying blind if you don't have a detailed business plan.
Yeah. How often should you update it?
Well, again, that is a very, very, very good question. It should be updated as necessary, depending upon what market you're in. Again, if you're in high tech, it's got to be updated on a regular basis, a monthly basis, as to what's going on in your marketplace. If it's in a low-tech business with not a lot of competitors, you're not updating it as much as that. But you constantly got to be aware of what we call your operating environment. That's the environment in which you do business, and single changes in those environments, whether it be in the financial environment, a change in interest rates. If it's in the legal political environment, then a new law is passed that makes your product more attractive or makes your product less attractive. Let me think of an example of, if you're in a particular business that's regulated by the government and they pass new regulations regarding pollution, and it's going to cost you more money to get rid of your waste from your business, you need to reevaluate your business. But if, in fact, you have a product, let's say, that deals with oil spills, and the government says that this type of product or piece of equipment has to be made available to oil gas stations or to it has to be like a defibrillator. If they would pass a ruling saying that all high schools have to have a defibrillator in their gymnasium, at least one defibrillator in their gymnasium, and one portable one that they take when they play outside of the school, and you're in that business, that's going to help your business. And if you're in a business that has a particular chemical that you use and the government says that chemical can no longer be used, you're out of business. So the regulatory environment, the economic environment, the natural environment where raw materials are, all these things have to be monitored to make sure that nothing is changing that's going to have a negative effect on your business and that there's not a change out there that's going to actually open up new opportunities for your business.
That's incredible. Well, you know, Kerry, a friend of mine here in Atlanta reviews business plans for several hundred investors, and his niche is medical products. And as he's looking at the plan, you know, he'll look at the product, he'll look to see, you know, do they have some intellectual property, they'll look at the business behind the product, but then his final focus is always on the team, and he's always wanting to find that at least one person on the team has been there, done that. He's taken a company from zero to several million, sold it, and he's ready to repeat that process. What do you think about that?
Well, I totally agree with that. You have to look at the track record of the people in the company who are forming the company or funding the company. Just the same way you would look at a racehorse if you go into the track. How many races has this horse won? Does it run well in the mud, in the rain? Before you put your money down. So the same thing if you're investing in a business. Who's flying the plane? Is it an experienced pilot? Can he handle bad weather? So that's where you get into with the serial entrepreneurs. They always have had good advice, good advisors. I'm working with a number of new product launches at this time and working with the people, but also we have stopped a new business from starting because of the fact that we were missing a critical element in it and we could not get it. So until we get that critical element, that person in place, it makes no sense rolling out the business. Every entrepreneur needs a mentor, needs somebody who's been there, done that, as your friend says. But in some cases, you have to deal with brand new business concepts that you've never even heard of before. And what I suggest when those things come up to the entrepreneur is partnering with somebody who's already in that business. Instead of starting a new business, actually going to somebody who has an existing business and saying, here, I have a new product, and you know, and I want to partner with you and spin it off. An example would be there is a group of professors in the UW system working on some new drugs for depression and for bipolar that don't have the side effects of the existing drugs. Now, for these guys to be successful and roll this out is virtually impossible because they are the inventors, they are the formulators, have no marketing experience, have no channels of distribution. So the best thing for them to do, and I've recommended, is to approach the pharmaceutical companies that do have all this, and they have, and these young scientists have the patent on the product, and either sell it and get the, you know, license it to these pharmaceutical companies or a pharmaceutical company and get commissions on what they sell, or have them provide all of the expertise for these people and become part of their company as maybe a separate division. So there's more than one way of utilizing the entrepreneurial approach. It doesn't mean start your own business. It means maybe sometimes incorporating with other businesses who can support what you're doing. So having the right people on your board, the right team, that attorney, the accountant, maybe the banker as all part of the group, or in some cases taking an alternative approach and linking up with an existing organization and that has the funding, has the distribution channels, and you have the product.
Yeah, that's important.
Gary, what final piece of advice would you give a young entrepreneur?
Well, I touched upon it before, but I'll say it again. Get a mentor. You know, I'm mentoring a lot of young people. In my entrepreneurial class at DeVry University, I've had a number of people take their business plans and turn them into real businesses, from somebody having a fitness center to another gentleman having a coffee shop that's extremely successful, to another person who started a brand new concept of it's a coffee shop that's paired up with a dog wash. And it sounds crazy, but while your dog is being groomed and washed, you're sitting in their coffee shop having coffee and scones, and so they're just not sitting around doing nothing. So they paired up those two things. Other ones, you know, I've worked with have had mobile dog washes. People don't want to drive, so they come to them and they do the dog grooming on their driveway. So getting a mentor, a business advisor, somebody who's been there, you don't always have to pay for that. You have SCORE across the country, which are the retired executives who volunteer their time. You have incubators, like I mentioned earlier, in Wisconsin, like Wibbit. They're all through the country. I was involved in the development of a second-tier incubator, which never got off the ground here. There wasn't enough demand for it, where you would actually have, instead of a single office, you'd have people could have multiple offices and cubicles, and their business would be going to the next level from a single person to a multiple person with the business support right there with consultants on premise. This model is working in San Francisco. To our Chamber of Commerce, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce has a group called Inventors and Entrepreneurs Forum that meets once a month for these people to network with each other. And in some cases, they have combined their businesses. So the advice that we give to any entrepreneur starting out is make sure they're working with a mentor that's going to challenge them to put together a cohesive and detailed business plan, for them to network their brains out, meeting people and linking up with potential people that are going to finance them or partner with them. Too many of these entrepreneurs work in isolation and isolate themselves, and They think they have this great idea, and then when they sit down and finally talk to somebody, they realize how many things they're missing from their business plan and their whole concept. So rather than being isolated, I'm saying get out there, collect information, learn about what you need to do, compete in these business plan contests. There's a number of them all over the country, sponsored by local chambers, both sponsored by the state. Here in Wisconsin, the winner gets a $50,000 check to start up their business. But they also get all this free feedback from myself and about 9 other judges on their business plan. So even the ones who don't win have all this mentoring and coaching that's coming from professionals. So my biggest piece of advice is gather information as much as you can.
Well, I'm real encouraged by the dog wash and coffee shop idea. When I was in college, you know, and I was going to laundromats and sitting there waiting for my clothes to get washed in the washing machine, and then you put them in the dryer and you watch it go round and round. I'm like, there's got to be something else to do other than study. I said, what if we had a laundromat with a bowling alley, or a laundromat with a bookstore, or with a child care center or something like that, you know, so that you could make your time productive while you're waiting for your clothes to get washed. So, dog wash and coffee shop.
Yeah, I thought that too, Ron, but my problem was I thought it should have a bar in it.
Oh, a laundromat and a bar. Okay.
You know, we would laugh about these things, and people are making a lot of money where they know that many of us own animals and own dogs, and we really care for them. And you get these restaurants now across the country that you can eat there with your dog, because they have a little area for the dogs to drink and eat while you're eating. I mean, it's just recognizing how people live, their psychographics, as we call it, their behavioral style, and not only the demographics. That's half the equation. You have to look at people's behavior, where they shop, when they shop, how they shop, who they shop with. And in my market research class, I demonstrate this to my students by sending them into a mall at different times of the day on different days, and they all come back and present their results, and you'd think that they were in 7 different malls or 8 different malls, but in reality, they were in the same mall, but people shop at different times, different types of people, by themselves or partnered up or with their young children, and you really get a picture of the whole business environment. As a kid, the one thing that stood out in my mind and never got that thought out of my mind was seeing families take their life savings, opening up a restaurant or opening up a dry cleaning store or a retail store in a neighborhood and lasting only a year and going out of business and saying to myself, what went wrong? And then somebody else opening up the same type of business in the same location and again going out of business. And as I became more educated and got my advanced degrees and took more market research and trained people in market research, it was all about market research. That if these people who opened up these stores had stood at that corner and watched people go by and see how many people went by in a day and who was buying what and where they were buying it, would have said, this is not the right location for me to have my candy store or my restaurant. I need to put it someplace else. So we've seen concepts work in certain locations and concepts not work in other locations. And it's all about getting back to what I said before, information, gathering the right amount of information, the right type of information from the right sources before you start your business.
Yeah, and I've seen people open up restaurants in the wrong location, and it goes under pretty fast. You know, one thing I saw, now that we're talking about dogs, is in Birmingham, Alabama, there's a veterinarian that has a drive-through window for the small dogs. So you drive up, you hand them your little poodle or your chihuahua or whatever and tell them what you need, and then you come back and they hand the dog back to you, and you pay your bill with a credit card and off you go.
Now you need to team that up with a McDonald's so you can get your breakfast at the same time.
That would be good.
Trade your dog for breakfast.
I mean, you know, we're laughing about this, but 20 years ago, if somebody had said to you that you can go in and give birth to your child in the hospital and be out, go in 7 o'clock in the morning and be home at 7 o'clock at night, you would say to the person, what are you, crazy? But isn't that what we have right now? We have drive-through health care.
Yeah.
You go in and you have procedures done as outpatient that years ago were inpatient for 7 days. So, it, you know, all these concepts of a drive-through vet, they have the vets across the country who are in mobile homes who drive to your driveway, and you bring your dog out, and your dog gets his checkup or whatever he wants. You take the dog back into the house. They have this in Arizona, traveling vet in,
yeah,
in Scottsdale.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Well, how can our listeners get in touch with you, Kerry?
Well, I do not have a web page. I found that very unproductive, but they can reach me through two ways. One, they can reach me with my personal email, which is capital C, SILVE, the number 10, the number 13, at AOL.com, or they can reach me through the Biz Times website, where my articles appear each month for the Biz Times Milwaukee, at www.biztimes.com. And they can click onto one of my articles, and at the bottom there's a contact number.
Okay, well, that's really super. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Kerry. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights, especially on strategies for navigating the barriers to entrepreneurial success.
Yeah, well, just the one piece of self-promotion that my first book will be coming out in October.
Oh, good.
And the title they gave me at the Biz Times was The Company Doctor. So the title of the book is The Company Doctor Prescribes, and it's easy solutions for the maladies that affect your business. So it's going to be a compilation of all the articles I've written over the last 7 years with updates. So that'll be out hopefully in October, both as an ebook and as in hard copy.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. That's super. Well,
thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, another great show, Bill.
It sure was, Ron. I'm also looking forward to reading your book, Kerry. That sounds really interesting.
Well, gentlemen, have a great day. I got to tell you, up in Wisconsin right now, it's about 42 degrees and drizzling, and we just came back from Arizona where it was 94 degrees and sunny.
What a change, what a change.
I also want to give a special thanks today to our sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide to the innovation jungle.
And you can listen again to today's show plus previous shows at our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.